Down here, you hear me okay? It's a pleasure to be back with you again. I've had the opportunity to be here a few times over the years, as you all have been partners in the work in Tanzania for quite some time, and I appreciate that very much. I hope that as we talk about it today, you'll be encouraged to know some of the things that you are partners in, things that you are helping to take place. It's a great work, I believe, and I'm proud to be a part of it, and proud to have you as a part of it as well. So what I like to do is, let's see, I'll begin here by showing you my family, so that humanizes me a little bit more. You see the better part of my life there. My wife, Tiffany, and my children. My oldest daughter there is a student at Fred Hardeman now. Her name's Abby. And then little boys Josiah and Levi that are 10 and 9 years old. And our Chinese daughter, Gracie, is 5. And so that's my support system. And so then how I like to proceed is to impress upon you the size of the task that is before us. Somebody might question, why do we need so many missionaries in Africa? I've heard about this work in Africa and this work, and how many missionaries do we really need over there, and how much work really needs to happen? Well, the task there is much larger than people might imagine, just with typical impressions of Africa. People don't realize how big Africa is. So one way to illustrate that is if you were to take off on a road trip and drive diagonally across, this is the longest way you can get across our great continent of North America from Miami, Florida, all the way up to North Pole, Alaska, then it would take you 77 hours to drive that 4,835 miles, according to Google. I haven't verified this from personal experience, but I'll take their word for it. It's a pretty long trip. Probably would take even longer because you're going to have to stop and get gas and have other breaks. But that's a long trip. But similarly, if you were to drive up the continent of Africa from Cape Town, South Africa, all the way up to Cairo, Egypt, then that's going to take you 159 hours if you take the short way to drive that 6,276 miles. So more than twice as much windshield time of driving up the continent of Africa as driving all the way across the continent of North America. It's a huge, huge area. Another way to illustrate it is this. You could take, and I think I've shown you this before, it's been a few years since I've been here, you may not remember, but you could take the countries of the United States and China and India and all of Western Europe and Japan and put them on the landmass that is Africa. Now, not to be confusing, this is not a map showing the actual countries of Africa. This is just showing you how, comparing the landmass, you take these countries, you could put them on Africa if you can move them. So, we're talking about a huge, huge area, 11.7 million square miles. Sometimes people think of Africa as a country. It's not a country, it's a continent. There are 54 countries on that continent. So we're talking about a monumental task. We're specifically concerned, of course, with Tanzania. It's on the southern part of Africa, East Africa, the eastern coast just below the equator. It's home of some of the things that I think of as quintessentially African. It's where Mount Kilimanjaro is, which is the highest point in Africa, tallest freestanding mountain in the whole world. So tall it has a permanent snow cap on it, even though it's there near the equator, well within the tropics. It's also bordered by Lake Tanganyika, which is the deepest lake in Africa, second deepest lake, freshwater lake in the whole world, which makes Tanzania the home of the highest and lowest points in Africa, which feels appropriate because mission work is full of highs and lows. It's also bordered by Lake Victoria, the largest lake in Africa, second largest freshwater lake in the whole world, and on the south, Lake Nyasa. So actually, it doesn't show up that great on this. Does this have a pointer? It does. There it is, yeah. All right, so there's those three lakes I was talking about. So if you're looking at a map of the continent of Africa that doesn't have the lines on it, an easy way to find Tanzania is to look for those three great lakes, and Tanzania is located in between the three of them. They form those borders. Anyway, and it's also where the Serengeti is. Yeah, so a lot of those African things are there. One more picture here to reference the size of what we're talking about. In Tanzania specifically, if we take Tanzania and superimpose it over southeastern United States, this is the type of area that we're talking about covering. So we're talking about a big area. So if you hear of a handful of mission works, well, you know, imagine hearing about just that many works right here in America, and would that be enough to cover the need here in America? In Africa, we're talking about a much larger area, a lot more people. And speaking of the people, that's the real thing. As we think about population statistics, of course, it's every population statistic represents souls, right? Well, in Africa right now, the population is exploding. The reason for that is Africa's always had a high birth rate, and it continues to have a high birth rate, although it is declining, as happens when countries become more and more industrialized. But they also have always had a very, very high death rate, mortality rate. And so nowhere stands to gain more from the proliferation of modern medicine than does Africa. And it is proliferating. Their lives are lengthening. And so as a result of those two factors combined, right now in Africa, for every one person that dies, there are four people being born. And so you don't have to be a mathematician to know that with that, you've got an exploding, booming population. So people that study these things and project these things tell us that they expect by the end of this century that Tanzania will be the eighth most populous nation in the world, and that its chief city of Dar es Salaam will be the third most populous city in the entire world. Isn't that something? So we have an opportunity now. There's kind of a sweet spot now. While they're still very receptive to the gospel, and while that population is still booming like that, to be well-positioned ahead of the curve. You know, as we think about, you know, every conversion in a population like that really has the potential to be, you know, the beginning of a Christian hierarchy is not the right word. What am I trying to say? A family of reaching out in generations and generations. You understand what I mean? We have a real opportunity here. So there's pressing work. There's a great task in front of us, and that's why it's important that we continue doing what is being done there. Here are some pictures of everyday life in Tanzania. It is a poor nation. Now, like many places, there are haves and have-nots. Many countries like this, what you find is there's very little middle class. And so you have people that are doing quite well, and then you have a lot of people that are not doing well at all. We'll talk more about that as we go. There are four aspects to the work there, as I see it. The first aspect that we'll talk about is preacher training. And preacher training is vital to the long-term sustainability of the work in any region. There has to be a method in place for training local people to do the work of evangelism. Otherwise, when the missionaries leave, the church is going to struggle. There has to be, you want to train local leadership. And that's been an important part of the model in Tanzania, as one of the things that has drawn me to the work that I love about it. And so we have the Andrew Connolly School of Preaching. Andrew Connolly is the gentleman in the upper corner. He was a pioneer in Tanzanian mission work. He began doing work there back in the, I guess it was back in the 60s, and he started in the southern part of Tanzania. He recruited Cy Stafford, that's the gentleman in the lower corner, to join him, and he became a missions mentor to Cy. Cy then eventually went and started the work in northern Tanzania that is where we're centered. Sal is the one that recruited me and my family to join the work, and he's then been my missions mentor. He started the Andrew Connelly School of Preaching, and it's been a great success. We've had students that have come to us and been trained to be evangelists from not only Tanzania, but we've had a lot of students come from Kenya. We've had students come from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, from Ethiopia, from South Sudan, from Uganda. In the early years, we even had some come all the way from Nigeria, which is across the continent. So this has been a work that is impacting not only Tanzania, but all of East Africa, and even to some extent, all of Africa. And now, some of our graduates are helping to operate other schools of preaching. There are three schools of preaching now in Kenya that our graduates are helping with. There's a school of preaching in Dar es Salaam that our graduates are helping to run. Soon, we expect there's going to be a school in South Sudan that our graduates are helping with. So, you see, there's this kind of pyramid of good. We'll never know this side of heaven. All the good that's done by the guys that we train and the guys that they help train, it's the biblical model, right? That's what Jesus did in training his apostles and teaching them to teach others also. And that's why you and I know the gospel today, is because people did that, right? So that's exciting to be a part of that type of model, that type of work. And I hope that you feel good about that. In 2017, our brother Si passed away. He was the director of the work. I don't have that picture anymore. Like I said, my dear friend and mentor. He had asked me to take over the work after he was no longer doing it. When he asked me that, we didn't have any idea that was going to be so imminent. We thought that was, something way in the future that was going to happen, but God had other plans for him. He's enjoying his reward now, and so I've taken over directing the work, and a lot of that is fundraising. And I want you to know, as I stand before you, that I'm not representing just myself and my family. I'm representing the entire work. I'm now responsible for the overall budget supporting the school, and the whole work is being raised through the efforts that we do. So when I stand here and talk to you about what we're doing and what you're financing, I'm not just speaking specifically about what Daniel is doing. You're a part of all of this. And so I'd like to feature these three men. This is the local leadership team of the School of Preaching. These are just three of the guys that you're helping to support. These are just three of the guys that I depend upon while I'm in America to make the work happen on the ground there in operating the School of Preaching. And they depend upon me here in connecting with congregations and raising funds to enable the work to continue. And this is Charles Ahimadiwe and Augustine, three wonderful Christian men that I feel very privileged to be able to work with in the school there. Matter of fact, just last night, with the time difference, they're 8 hours ahead during daylight savings time. And so last night at about 1 o'clock a.m. I was interacting with some of these guys about some matters there in Tanzania. So that's just part of it, right? And also, with technology is great. I'm able to teach a class every week in Tanzania from here, wherever I am. Every Tuesday I teach a class. And then, of course, personal evangelism. That's what it really is all about, right? Even the preacher training, you're training them to be evangelists. And even while they're in school, they're spending their weekends doing evangelism. And so that's an important part of the School of Preaching. But also, we have the opportunity for missions campaigns. We work with local evangelists as well. And what I like to do here is I want to tell you a story. And there's some... there's some twists and turns in the story, some weird African names, and I hope you don't get lost in those as I tell you the story, because I think as we go through this, I'm going to tell you how the church began and grew in the lakes region of Tanzania, because I think it well illustrates how different aspects of the work together for the building up of the body of Christ. And you'll see as we go along. So the church in this area began with a man named Pascal. Now, I don't have a picture of Pascal. That's not Pascal. But Pascal was a Christian. He was not a terribly mature Christian. As far as his doctrine, it lacked some things. It had some things to be desired. He wasn't. It reminds me a little bit of Apollos, right? He was doing well, but he needed to be taught the way a little more perfectly. But he knew he loved Jesus, and he had some tracts that taught the gospel. And he had obeyed the gospel appropriately. Well, he takes these tracts as he moves into this area, and he shares them with people, including this man. This man is Bahati. And so the Bahati and his family receive these tracts. They believe them, they respond to them, they obey the gospel, and they begin meeting under this fig tree. And so the church in the Imilamagigo village began under this fig tree in Bahati's backyard because of a man sharing some tracts. This is where that congregation meets now. And they need a better building that's more adequate for them. One of our challenges in trying to build the building for them is their location. They're located in a remote area near the top of a mountain, and you can't get there by vehicle. You have to walk, and so getting building materials up to them is a challenge that we're trying to figure out. But anyway, so that's where the church is now. Sai sent a team of missionaries, a team that included a missionary, an African evangelist, and a preaching student by the name of Yusuf, and some others as well, to conduct a campaign and do a seminar at this congregation, with the result that there were 11 conversions from the nearby city of Usharambo. Now, this is a picture of Yusuf, the preaching student that I mentioned. And then during Christmas break, we sent Yusuf back to help teach Pascal better and to evangelize. And there were 16 more conversions. Here is Yusuf at in front of the building where the congregation at Usharambo meets. And after graduation, Yusuf went back there to work full time. This is a recent picture of the children of that congregation, so you can see how their church has grown and the young people that are a part of it. And that congregation is bursting at the seams in a very good way. Well, at that Christmas break campaign, there was a man named Amos. So there's Amos from the nearby village of Lulumbela. And Yusuf found him and helped him start a congregation in his village. And with the help of American supporters, we were able to build a building. This is it. The building is finished now. This was it during the construction phase for the congregation there at Lulumbela. Also at that same Christmas break campaign, there was a family converted from the village of Kazabizio. And with the help of American supporters, we were able to build a building for the church at Kazabizio. And there's a picture when we were there doing a children's seminar, and there are kids, you know, looking in the windows, wanting to see what's involved, what's going on in that that congregation. We also were able to drill a well for that congregation, so they became a source of water, both the living water and physical water for the area around. And so at that point, Pascal passed away suddenly, just over a year after he shared those tracts with a family and watched four churches and dozens of Christians spring up. Isn't that something? And then, it's not over. This is the Imbambula Primary School. The headmaster of the Imbambula Primary School was a Christian. He allowed us to go and do a campaign there, with the result that 40 souls were baptized in this little pit. And not all at one time, they took turns. It's a small pit. The first was this lady. Her name's Rebecca. And so she was the first one baptized in that area. And they continued to meet in that little building, that schoolhouse, and grew to 200 people, 200 members, until the government stepped in and said, you can't be operating a church out of our schoolhouse. And they kicked them out. And for a while, they met in this building until it became so weather damaged it wasn't safe anymore. And then they had to resort to meeting in the backyard of this family. And as that happened, their numbers dwindled down to about 60 or so. But with the help of American supporters, we were able to build them a building. It's finished now. This was it during the construction phase. And so now they have a safe and permanent home for that congregation to grow and flourish again. And there's a picture of the tracts that we produce and distribute. So I hope you're able to follow that story, because what we saw in that story, we saw literature, we saw tracts, we saw local evangelists, we saw preaching students, we saw missionaries, we saw American supporters all doing their part, all chipping in, all doing what they could, and the church growing and spreading as a result of it. No one could have done it by themselves, but it took each part doing their part and working together for the building up of the body of Christ. Now, isn't that beautiful? That, you see why I like telling that story, because I think it brings all those things together when you see it happening like that. And that same thing reproduces all over. So that's what you're a part of. Swahili, yeah. So part of what I have to raise money for every year is we spend about $5,000 trying to produce these tracts that are distributed for evangelistic purposes. And then we also buy Bibles. The Bibles run us about $8 a piece for buying Swahili Bibles. Here are some pictures from Bible studies. Bible studies are so easy there to get. It really kind of spoils you, because the only limit to the number of Bible studies you can have there is how much time you have to devote to it. There's never any lack of people that are willing to study with you. Asked one guy if he had time to study the Bible with me, and he said, all time is God's time, so how can I not have time to study the Bible? That's a pretty good answer, wasn't it? And we'd be better off if more of us had that attitude. And so there are campaigns every year. Now, last year we couldn't do campaigns because of COVID, and that kind of shut down travel for a lot of folks. I still was able to get in and go last year, but as far as taking groups, that was difficult to do. But we look forward to that being resumed again next year. And let's see. Bible studies there are, you wind up with a lot of the same issues, a lot of the same questions you deal with here. Some things are different. You have to deal with polygamy. That's a big thing there. You have to deal with, one guy asked me one time, if I'm going down to the river to be baptized and I'm eaten by a crocodile. Yes, you probably don't deal with that question here very often, more than once or twice, probably not. But anyway, evangelism is fun there. Here's some folks that were baptized just this past summer from the Lara congregation on the side of Mount Meru. And this lady, I studied with her and her two of her children. They're Mexicans. So here, through the providence of God, this guy from Kentucky goes to Tanzania and studies with a Mexican family and baptizes them. How does that happen? She's married to a Tanzanian man, so she moved to Tanzania and is living there with her family, but she speaks beautiful English. And so that was, the providence of God that happened. And then, of course, providing benevolence is a third area. We can't solve the problem of poverty, but we can make a difference in the lives of some folks. And so with the help of American supporters, we've been able to provide food, clothing, shelter, sometimes some school fees, sometimes some medical help to some very worthy and needy individuals. Like Paul said in Galatians 2:10, all they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do. One of the ways that we'll be judged, apparently, is by how our faith motivated us to seek to alleviate the suffering of others and help others. Tanzania, I mentioned already, is a country of haves and have-nots. The two-thirds of Tanzanians live on less than $1.25 per day, with the result that a third of the population is malnourished. It is an impoverished nation for the most part. Many opportunities to help needy individuals there. Last year, we were able to, it's a country that their economy relies heavily on tourism. People come to climb Kilimanjaro, and they come to go on safaris. You know, there are world-class safaris there in Tanzania. I mentioned the Serengeti is there. So you want to go and see lions and elephants and giraffes and zebras, that's a wonderful place to go do that. Anyway, for some reason, early last year, people quit coming. You don't notice that? People quit traveling when COVID hit. And so in a country where tourism is an essential part of their economy, that was devastating. So we were able to raise $6,000 to buy rice and beans to help some of the Christian families make it through. Here's a lady making gravel by hand. That's how she makes her living, just to illustrate kind of how hard life is for a lot of people. This is the most common child's toy we see there. It's a bucket lid nailed to a stick, and he'll roll it along the ground. He thinks that's really cool. So that's the most popular toy we see. You know, Christmas is coming up. You're going to want to maybe put this on. You got kids or grandkids. They'll love it. some groups are good about including some benevolence in their evangelistic campaigns. One year, a group brought mosquito nets and was able to give mosquito nets to all the Christian families in Arusha, which is in an area where malaria is. That can actually be a life and death kind of gift. And then edifying the church is the fourth area of the work there. And that's because it really just begins at baptism. We don't want to just get them wet and leave them and wish them well. We want to help the churches to develop and grow and mature as they ought to. So there's a lot of things we're involved in trying to help that to happen. there's some preachers that were able to provide some financial support for. Certainly not all. In no way all, but for some. But even with the ones that we're able to provide financial support for, we want that to be a temporary thing. We want the churches to be taking over support of that. So what we do is we begin with a 10-year commitment to them, and most of them we start out at $150 a month. And what we'll do is, one, we give the money to the congregation rather than directly to the preacher. That way it establishes accountability for the preacher to the congregation. The money is there for the church. If the preacher leaves for some reason, the church feels he needs to leave, he wants to leave and go somewhere else, that's fine. The money's there for the church to pay for their preacher, whoever, when a new one comes in, stays there. Two, that creates a flow that the money is going from the congregation to support their preacher rather than what we've seen in years gone by is the preacher becomes the benevolent source in the congregation where he's sort of supporting the congregation. And if that happens, would you understand his heart in making that happen? It's really what you would expect from a man who's preaching the gospel. But when that happens, that congregation is never going to be able to support him. So you have to create the flow where the congregation is supporting the preacher. So at first, we're going to help the congregation support their preacher. But the expectation is that they're going to take that over. And to help them take that over, each year we drop that support 10%. So we're taking dropping $15 a year off of that until it's gone and it's shifted completely onto the shoulders of the local congregation. And then what we do with the money, that $15 that we've stopped giving to this congregation, is add it to the $15 we've stopped giving to that one and that one and that one, we're able to start a new church grant. And so it's a steady rolling system of churches being weaned off of support, new churches getting support that they need, and that's the model that we're trying to employ right now. We're a couple of years into that, but that's what we're doing now to try to help the churches do what they can't do, but also help them to work towards independence, financial independence. So that's one of the things that we do. We also have some Bible schools, Kilimanjaro Bible School, the Arusha Bible School, Kisango Bible School, and these are different from the school of preaching. The school of preaching is for faithful Christians who want to become preachers. The Bible schools are kind of a night school type model, and it's open to anybody. And we'll have denominational preachers that come, and we're happy to teach them the way more perfectly, right? And we'll have new Christians come, and they have their biblical knowledge accelerated through those types of studies. And so that's one of the things we do. There's all types of seminars that we're able to do going around different congregations. This is my wife doing a children's seminar at the Kisango congregation. We try to get around to as many different churches as we can. It's something that in my role as coordinator, I need to lay eyes on as many churches as I can. See their situation in person, let them know they're seen, so that encourages them, but also lets me see what they need and helps facilitate that connection. And so I've had the opportunity, I'll mention this again later probably, but to go to places where missionaries haven't gone in a long time, interact with churches to encourage them and help them. Here's one of my favorite pictures from this year. This is, there are layers here. Let's start in the back. This was at a congregation in Maasai country. We went and did a children's seminar there. And this is a congregation that there's not a road to. And so you have to go off-road. I was driving a Land Cruiser, and the guy that was with me said, "Okay, no, go that way." I said, "There's not a road that way." He said, "I know, go that way." So we veer off the road, and we're just going across the field, just trying to dodge the thorn bushes. There are these little acacia bushes everywhere, and they have thorns that are a couple of inches long. This is how I imagine the crown of thorns on Jesus' head. You know, it's depicted as giant thorns. That must have been acacia thorns. At least that's how the artists always imagine it. But those are everywhere, and I don't want that in my tire. So we're dodging those. There's a creek bed. We got to find our way down the creek bed and out the other side. So certain times of year, you can't get there because the water's going to be rushing through. And eventually, we come out in a clearing, and there's a church building. You wonder, how did that even get there? And there's certainly going to be nobody show up here. We didn't pass a lot of houses out here. We're out here in the middle of nowhere. But then here, within just a few minutes, half hour or so, there's 150 people that show up out of the bush. I don't know where they came from, but they were there ready to hear the gospel, ready to be taught the Bible. So the children are inside the church building there, and that's my son standing at the lectern, my 10-year-old son, and he's leading children's songs in Swahili to the gathered children there. And then my wife soon will take over there and do some Bible lessons with them. And then in the foreground is my Chinese daughter, and she's playing with the earring of this Maasai grandmother that had been so patient and kind to Gracie, and they had developed this great rapport. And so you see this, my American-born son, my Chinese-born daughter, this Maasai lady in the bush of Africa, all in this one place. This picture should be impossible. This picture shouldn't happen, right? And what brings it all together is the love of Christ. And that's what, and to me, this is a glimpse of heaven. Because when we get there, we're going to have people from all different backgrounds, walks of life, nations that have been cleansed by the blood of Jesus, that have that in common, and we're going to be dwelling together, not caring about national borders or race or anything else like that. We're going to be dwelling together in peace and love and harmony. And so anyway, I like to share this because I there's so much there to me. That same day, I spent the day out under that tree studying with the men that showed up, tribal leaders and so forth. And at one point, there were 12 of us gathered under that tree, and I couldn't help but think about Jesus and his disciples and the impact that those 12 men made, and I prayed that these men would be able to make a similar impact on their culture and society. Every year, we have the Tanzania Leadership Conference. Matter of fact, it's going on this weekend. And the Tanzania Leadership Conference is a big, it's a seminar we host there at the School of Preaching. And church leaders from all over East Africa will come and take part in that lectureship. It's a great time to catch up with our alumni and see what they've been up to. And it's an important thing for us. Also, we have, this is our new project. I need to update this picture because the building is finished now. And we're using it. But before Cy died, his last vision for the work was to build a leadership school because he identified there was a great need for leadership training. You know, in Tanzania, I'm only acquainted with maybe four congregations in the whole country that have elders. There's just a great lack of elders in, and I think that's common in a lot of mission areas, but there's a need for church leadership training. And so we wanted to provide that, to train elders and deacons, to train even preachers more specifically in church leadership type roles. You know, that's something I really wish that even in America we had more eldership training. I don't know that the elders here, most elders that I've encountered, they were just thrown into the office with a, you know, good luck, figure it out, right? And it would be nice if they had the benefit of having some training and prep. We put a lot of effort into preacher training here, right? And going to Bible schools and things like that. It'd be nice if we had some effort put into eldership training. So that's one thing that we want to do, and we're looking forward to taking our first class in for the Cy wasn't able to see this come to fruition while he was alive, but we've kept the dream alive, and we've built the school now, and the Cy Stafford School of Leadership is going to take in its first class early next year. We're really looking forward to that and excited about it. We also host a couple of camps at the School of Preaching each year. We have a Tanzania Christian Camp, which is similar to Bible camps here in America. Is there a Bible camp that kids here go to? Okay. So it's that similar type of model. And then we also host a Future Preacher Training Camp, which is more geared toward teaching the kids to be able to prepare and deliver lessons, devotionals, lead singing, lead prayers, lead in the worship service, those sorts of things, conduct Bible studies. And so it's more geared that way. And they what we do is we have that first, then we'll have Tanzania Christian Camp the next week, and those students will wind up evangelizing many of their peers during Tanzania Christian Camp. And so that works out well. One thing we did last year was my daughter, as a project, put together these Bible class teaching kits, and we took them to a lot of the congregations that don't receive as many foreign visitors, and shared these kits with them, and she would teach them these Swahili children's songs. She would teach them how to use these kits. And that was something that some of the congregations that didn't realize they needed to be teaching their children the Bible. And so they had to share with them that was a good idea. And some of them just had been trying but had no resources at all to do it. And so they were very thankful to have some resources to help them with that. You know, Swahili children's Bible class songs, as far as I know, my wife Tiffany is the world's foremost authority on Swahili children's Bible class songs. You know, if you do a Google search for them, it's her YouTube videos are what's going to pop up to teach people, and people going to campaigns will watch them. People in Tanzania will watch them to learn these songs. Many of them are songs that she had translated and put to a team. And so, I said that only partially in jest. I really think she's actually responsible for a great many of the children's Bible class songs that they use. Anyway, so I'm proud of her for that. I try to get around, like I said earlier, to as many different congregations as I can over there to see their situation. Sometimes they'll ask me to come in and deal with a particular issue that they're facing, maybe like a one-cup issue or a marriage, divorce, or remarriage issue or some thing that's become a hot topic in the congregation, and they'll ask me to help with that. Or sometimes it's just connecting with them. But that's something that's important. We're also concerned about sustainability. We've added solar power to the school, and it's taken it mostly off of the electric grid. We have a farm project that is here this year. With our harvest, we have harvested enough sunflowers to make all the cooking oil that the school will need for the next year. We've harvested enough corn to provide all of the cornmeal that they'll need for the next year, which is a staple there. Their primary food source is a food called ugali, which... Do y'all eat grits in West Virginia? Okay. Imagine grits that were made so thick you could break them off and hold them in your hand and eat them. All right. That's what ugali is. And it's not bad, it just doesn't have a taste. It takes on the flavor of whatever you eat it with. It's one of those kind of things. Anyway, so the farm is helping with that. We're expanding our orchard. We've got cows, we've got chickens, both broilers and layers, and we're about to start a pig project. And so that's one of the ways that we're looking to take off a lot of that from the school budget and help the school in that way. And we've just now gotten the money for our water project. We have a well that is a mile away. There's no water on the school property, and we've searched for it. There's no water there, but we do have a well a mile away, and we own the little lot there. And so what we are doing right now is connecting that well, digging a water line to bring it to the school property to provide a source of reliable, free, and once it's done, water for the farm there at the school, for the school itself, for the house there. And so those are some sustainability things that we're doing. There's our corn crop, corn harvest. Yeah, a lot of corn, right? Okay, so the mission there is edification, it's benevolence, it's evangelism, it's preacher training. And these are the things that we're doing. These are the things that the church ought to be concerned about everywhere, right? Because this is a part of, this is what doing church is. And that's one of the reasons I like this work so much, is it's involved in so many areas. It's a lot of bang for the buck in that matter. Okay, so needs and opportunities. The number one need is prayers. And here I've gotten down to, my time really is up, and this is the part where I'm telling you what we need. I should have skipped some stuff earlier and got here. But anyway, the number one thing we need is prayer. If you are not on our email list and would like to be, so that you can receive reports from us here and there, so that you know how to pray, give me your email address. I'll be happy to add you to that list, And then I'll be reaching out to you about your car's extended warranty. And I won't do that, I promise. It'll just be mission-related stuff. Also, of course, we need financial contributions. You're already monthly supporters. Please continue to do that. One-time support also is helpful. Something, I haven't talked in public about this yet, but something that I'm wanting us to do is to begin an endowment fund that would provide, you know, perpetual financial stability for the work well into the future. And it's occurred to me that if we could get just 100 people to give the work $10,000 in their estate, then that would provide $1 million endowment that would provide roughly $100,000 a year in perpetuity to fund the work. Wouldn't that be great? Then I wouldn't have to spend. Then if something happened to me, there's that financial security. I wouldn't have to spend as much time raising money, spend more time there in the field. So as you think about your estate planning, think about mission work as well. A $10,000 contribution from your estate. If not to our work, to somebody's. So you can do a lot. There's a lot of good that can be done through estates. Anyway, so that's something to think about. And then also referrals. Maybe you have a brother, a cousin, a casual acquaintance, somebody you met at the mall that is in a leadership position in another congregation. Maybe you could reach out to them and say, hey, there's this work we support. They're doing some great things. Maybe you'd like to hear about them, and then connect them with me, and I'd love to go and talk to them about the work. And so those are some ways that you can help. And I'd like to close with this visual, because as we do this work, and we talked earlier about each part doing their part, it takes everybody, and it's that chain of good. As the local church supports mission efforts, that enables them to be able to reach those lost, and it facilitates that work, and it's all part of God's plan, and the senders are just as much a part of that process as the one that's conducting that actual Bible study that the person responds to. You know, God says in Romans 10, verse 14, how then will they call on him in whom they have not believed, and how will they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how will they hear without a preacher, and how will they preach unless they are sent? So thank you for being senders and for having a heart for mission work. If you have questions, I'm around. I'm here.
Thank you for your...
Yes, sir. Too quick.
Yes, sir.
The land map that large.
Yes, sir.
How many languages are we talking about?
In Africa, counting all tribal languages, they speak, I think, about 1,200 different languages. It's astounding. It's a problem. But most Africans speak multiple languages. The average Tanzanian is going to speak their tribal language. They're also going to speak Swahili, and they might speak English and maybe a handful of other tribal languages as well. So the actual languages you have to operate in is a much smaller number than that. And part of that is thanks to colonialism. So you get English and French, you're able to cover, through English, French, and Swahili, you could cover most of Africa and get something done there. So that is it kind of goes back to the old joke. What do you call somebody that speaks two languages? They're bilingual. What do you call somebody that speaks three languages? They're trilingual. What do you call somebody that speaks one language? American. which, much, there's a little truth in that. Yes, sir, second question.
I hate to use the word competition, but what other religions, like Muslim and Buddhist, and what was there before we moved in, and what kind of religious background are we dealing with other than the Church of Christ?
Sure, he's asking about... about other religions that are in the area. So you've got primarily, it's kind of divided about half and half, Muslim and then would call themselves Christians, with a small sliver that's going to be indigenous religions. The Muslims are, it's kind of a gradient. On the coastal area, it's probably 90% Muslim, and that fades the further inland you get. And then those that call themselves Christians are going to be just the opposite. The further inland you get, the more they are. The closer to the coast, the fewer they are. Of the so-called Christian groups, what you're going to see the most are Lutherans are really big there. Catholics, of course. Orthodox to some extent. And then Seventh-day Adventists, Sabbatarians, are big there. And charismatic groups. Pentecostals are really, they do really well there because spiritualism, in their history, their religious history, they're very spiritual people. And so as far as miracles and spiritualism and stuff like that, that's something that they connect to culturally and really thrives there. So that sometimes you get these weird hybrids, thank you, there's the word I was looking for. Hybrids, like Lutherans, I mentioned they're big there. Lutheranism is not charismatic at all. But you get charismatic Lutherans there. And so, you know, that it's kind of weird. Anyway, so that's, I guess that answers your question.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Of the pictures I saw women and children. Are most homes, do they include a male leader?
Some, you know, a good amount do, but there are a lot of families, a lot of homes that don't have a male there. You've got infidelity is rampant there, I guess as it is here, really. But you have an awful lot of unmarried mothers that are taking care of their children alone. You have a lot of men that it's culturally much more acceptable for the man to leave his family behind for maybe even years at a time and go to another village and do some work or something before coming back. And so you've got, you have that. You do have polygamy as a thing. So inherently in those situations, you've got more women and children than you do a man. There's one Maasai leader there that had so many children, the government came and built him a school just for his family. He had over 100 kids. Yeah. So that's...
You can see why there's problems with leadership.
Yes, you can. And as you think, even think politically,
the model of the strongman dictator is prevalent on the continent. And there are so many of those at the highest levels of government, and that same model goes down to you're dealing with local police a lot of times, and unfortunately, because it's the societal model, that's the way a lot of times preachers will try to operate in the church.